Reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter 5. Om Gyanatimaram Yasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Daksu Mulatam Yena Taismai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Vidati Sapadantikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripashindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadei Gaurabhakta-vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Sridhar Mayapur. And I think there may be one or two new people today, so just want to bring this story quickly up to date, but in a way that people who have been listening for a while also will just get a review of this wonderful story. This is by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's a story, a history, a novel. Question of exactly where that stands. But it's the story of people coming to Krishna consciousness, the generation after Sri Chaitanya in West Bengal. And according to who they are, they have a different, so it's various people. It's a wonderful novel. According to who the people are that are coming, they need to learn different subjects in Krishna consciousness to proceed with faith. For example, someone who's an impersonalist and comes to Krishna consciousness needs to understand the subject of Bhagavan Tattva, or the subject of the nature of God. Then there may be someone who's religious but materially attached. So, and they come to Krishna consciousness, and they need to know the subject of renunciation. And someone coming to Krishna consciousness may come from a particular caste, specifically a Brahmin caste. So they need to know the subject of what really is religion, which is beyond one's social status. So we're up to the part of the story where a rich, wealthy Brahmin landholder, has come to Krishna consciousness, and the place they're coming is this forest dower ashram of the great Babaji, renounced sadhu. And they're basically bhajananandis, as opposed to goshtanandis. They're taking their pleasure in a solitary spiritual life, more or less, more than a communal. Although they have, it's kind of mixed, but they're meditating, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day, that type of life. So this rich aristocratic Brahmin landholder comes to Krishna consciousness and his doubts have been cleared, which is the purpose of philosophy, at least in bhakti, is to clear doubts so that one can open their heart to the experience of Krishna consciousness. And so he's now firmly fixed, but his children, are disturbed because religion for them is material. They actually believe that it's material in two ways. One, they perform it for some material benefit, which is within the scope of religious practice, because the world is a hayagya, the world is kind of constructed with this reciprocation for sacrifice. So if you make sacrifice, even though it's a material motive, you can get some benefit from it to encourage you in that way to be socialized, human. But also, it's a prestige because their nirvana, their social system, social position, is that they're the priest or the teachers. So they are respected. So the family becomes very embarrassed because historically at that time, Navadvipa was basically predominantly this materialistic type of religion. You know, and you often see that when religion, how easily religion can be divorced from its goals. If one is a Christian, in bhakti we consider that. If they're really purely a Christian, they can be a pure devotee. But we see, you know, you can be a Christian, you know, right-wing politics. You can be a Christian football fanatic. In other words, there's so little correlation between the culture in which one lives and one's values. So, sons, even though the goal of religion is to surrender to God, people who have a materialistic value, they really don't want that, especially for their own children. They may have a religion, but if one follows it, I see this all the time in my own outreach of Krishna consciousness, that people, the parents want the children to be religious in their own religion. But it's just a cultural thing. It has nothing to do with the essence of religion, which is a very internal and spiritual thing. So the family is very upset, and they send one of their sons to kind of and one of their nephews, Davy Das, and Shambhunath, to go get their father. And we're in the part where they're kind of trying to convince their father to come back, saying that we also perform religion. And a lot of times we're doing the same things that you're doing. We're also worshiping the deity. So why don't you just come home? You know, we'll give you all facilities. Just come home. And Lahari, their father, is explaining them. He's explaining to them why he's so reluctant. He's explaining to them why he's so reluctant to come home. Because he doesn't find at home the level of Sangha. He's associating with people who are pure devotees. And you don't have to be in bhakti, because the bhakti is not renunciation, it's dedication. Bhakti can be executed within the family. But it's not just a question that he's in the forest bower with great monks, although it may be legitimate that he's got this taste of concentrating, retiring from the world, which is one's right when he gets older. But it's not just that. It's just that he doesn't find any pure devotees at home. And association is the key in how the path of bhakti moves. As said by, I mentioned in Nectar Devotion, that association is like a crystal ball. We're like a crystal ball, our hearts, and we reflect what's in proximity. There's a red light, the crystal ball becomes red. If there's some other color, it becomes that color. If there's some form, it reflects that. We reflect that which we intimately associate with. And we are social beings. So it's very, very important to have intimate relationships with spiritual people. But the son is arguing, we are spiritual. We perform, a lot of the activities you are. But the father explains that you don't actually understand, because it's not just the activities you perform. It's the intention in which you do them. Bhakti means to please. It's not, so you can perform an activity, but if it's for yourself rather than to please God, if that's your intention, of course we do it for ourselves sometimes so that we can please God, but that has to be our goal. We may know that pleasing God is so beneficial and that we'll become happier. Yes, but the goal is to please God, to sacrifice ourselves. And bhakti means that intention. So you can do an activity, but it's not exactly bhakti, or it's mixed bhakti. So a lot of the same activities that one does in bhakti, which is chanting mantras, which is worshiping deities, which is reading sacred texts, is also there within the path of karma, to achieve material benefit, and it's also there within the path of Gyan, to become attain Brahman realization. But that's not love, and that's not bhakti, and that's what this Lahari, that's the faith he has in his heart, that the highest sublimity and therefore the highest goal is to serve the absolute truth. So Devi Das, his son, challenges, then you do admit that the divisions, angas of Hari Bhajan, have some secondary results. So it's a fact that when you perform bhakti, you get more than just prema. If you chant within nambas, material desires can be fulfilled, liberation should come. So the son's saying, well, you admit that there are secondary results. So, there are secondary results. When we're performing, we get these secondary results. So what's the difference between what we're doing and you're doing? Part of the path of bhakti. But Lahari, the father, says yes, but the results depend on the different types of practitioners, sadhakas. The Vaishnavas perform sadhana bhakti, that's devotional service and practice, for the sole purpose of coming to the perfectional stage of devotion known as Siddha Bhakti. So he said, yes, there are secondary results, but it depends how you're performing it. And what I'm doing now in Vaishnavism is I'm performing sadhana bhakti for the sole purpose of coming to the perfectional stage. When non-Vaishnavas perform the very same divisions of bhakti, then when you're not a devotee, you can do the same practices, but they have two principal motives, the desire for material enjoyment, bodha, and the desire for liberation, moksha. Externally, there is apparently no apparent difference between the sadhana practices of the Vaishnavas and those of non-Vaishnavas, but there is a fundamental difference in motivation. When one worships Krishna through the path of karma, you can worship Krishna, but the path of karma means you're worshiping Krishna, but you're giving him a bag of rice so that your daughter can get married or that your business is successful. So you may obtain material fruits, freedom from disease or liberation when you do it that way. But the same worship of Krishna through the path of bhakti produces only praying for Krishna Nam. But when you do the same worship through the path of bhakti, which is you're not asking anything for yourself, but you're doing it to actually give your heart to something greater than yourself, and anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma jnanam vritam anukulena krishna, bhakti means without any ulterior motives. When karmis, those who follow the path of karma, observe ekadasi, it eradicates their sin. So in Vaishnavism, there's a practice of ekadasi, the 11th day after the new and full moon. One refrains from eating grains and beans. So people, you can fast all day, and people follow that, and Vaishnavas follow it. So when a materialist follows it, you'll get free from sins. Whereas when the bhakti observes bhakti, it enhances their hari bhakti. Just see what a world of difference it is. Madhavatiti bhakti janani. The gaze of Lord Hari give birth to devotion. So it's a completely different thing. The difference between sadhana practice performed as an aspect of karma and sadhana performed as an aspect of bhakti is clear, but it is very subtle, and only one who has Bhagavan's mercy may know it. There's a difference. Sometimes it's a little, but one who actually has opened their heart and sincerely wants to advance in spiritual life, because that's what bhakti is. Bhakti is the heart. Bhakti means, great definition, Kajumna Pugin. Bhakti means to make yourself available. The bhaktis obtain the primary result, where the karmis get caught up in the secondary. So the primary result is prema, love of Godhead. That's the ultimate objective. With the karmis, they get the secondary. You may be free from sins, you may get liberation, you may get your material desires fulfilled. So the karmis, the secondary results, may broadly you divide into two categories, namely bhakti, you get material enjoyment, and mukti, liberation. So now Devi Das will kind of challenge what his father just said. And that's why this book, Jiva Dharma, is so beautiful. If any question that we may ask has been already presented in the book, then why do the Shastras extol the virtues of the secondary results? So in the Shastras, it may say, I've even seen in Hare Nam Chintamani, if you chant Nam Bas, you get liberation, all your desires are fulfilled, all mystic powers. Nam Bas means a certain level of chanting. So it is mentioned there. It is mentioned there. So why? Lahari, There are two kinds of people in the world, those who are spiritually awake and those who are spiritually unconscious. So it's very interesting because Lahari, you can see what happens is, now, it's so interesting, see how the bhakti works. The first person we met was Sannyas Thakur, practically a self-realized impersonalist sannyasi. And he meets Babaji Maharaj, and he asks all his questions about what is the eternal duty of the soul, and he understands that it was part of God was made for his service, that it's bhakti, not just to become liberated from the world, but to actually love God. Not just a negative thing, there's a positive thing. It's that we're servants of God in love. So he becomes liberated, and then this Mahari, the father who's speaking now, comes, and all his doubts get eradicated. Now, the son is coming to his father. So we see in each dialogue, you'll see much of what this person has learned, he's now teaching. It's this thing about different entities spiritually awake and spiritually unconscious. Those who are actually interested in becoming dedicated to God and liberated from the world, and those who are not, who are interested in enhancing their position in the world. There are two kinds of people in the world. The Shastras have praised secondary results for the benefit of those who are spiritually unconscious and who do not perform any pious activities unless they can visualize the result. So he says, yes, those who don't have a spiritual goal and won't perform anything of spiritual value unless there is a material reward, those people who are unconscious, don't have a spiritual vision, yes, the Shastras do give this so that they can visualize a material result and they'll have enthusiasm to perform some kind of activity that will purify them. However, the Shastras do not intend such people to remain satisfied with secondary results. Rather, their attraction to secondary results should induce them to perform virtuous acts which will hasten their contact with sadhus. So they may have an attraction to some kind of materially or secondary results that induces them to perform virtuous acts, but by that virtuous act in coming from scriptures and in the association of priests, they have a better chance of meeting a sadhu. And then he says, then by the mercy of the sadhus, they will come to know of the primary results of Hari Bhajan and Ruchi for those results will awaken them. And eventually the whole system here is that the whole social system of India is geared so that your home and your life will be open to eventually meeting a sadhu who can instill within your heart the desire for devotion. Devi Dasi. Then are we to understand that Raghunandan and the other authors of the Smriti Shastras are spiritually unconscious? So Devi Dasi and most of Navadvipa at that time were following these Smriti Shastras where you perform religious spiritual activities for material gain. So Raghunandana is a great teacher of this, and that makes challenging. What you say that Raghunandana is spiritually unconscious? And Lurina says, no, but the system they have prescribed is for the spiritually unconscious. However, they themselves seek the primary result. So it could be that very, very great devotees teach something less that's for others and not for themselves, and not as their ultimate objective, but they're dealing with materialistic people. Devi Dasi said some Shastras only describe the secondary results and do not mention the primary results at all. Why is this? So Devi Das, he's actually a logician. He makes his money by teaching logic and other types of Shastra. Very smart. He's saying, well, look, you're saying that the result that people go to Shastras for mukti, liberation, or bhoga, material enjoyment, but really the purpose is to bring them to bhakti, which is the primary result, prema, which is the primary result. But I see, he says, books that don't mention that at all. So if the objective is to bring them that, then why is this? Why isn't it mentioned in some of the Shastras at all? It says nothing about devotion to God. Lari, there are three types of Shastras, of Shastra corresponding to the varieties of adhikari, eligibility among human beings. So there are three types referring to the eligibility. He said, for satvika, or the nature of goodness, rajasika, or the nature of passion, and tamasika, or the nature of ignorance. The satvika shastras are for the people who are imbued with the nature of goodness. The rajasika shastras are for those enveloped by the nature of passion, and the tamasika shastras are for those the nature of ignorance. Then Devi Dasi. If that is the case, how should one know which directives of the Shastra to have faith in, and how may those who are less eligible attain a higher destination? He said, okay, there's different Shastras, but then how does one know which to have faith in? And if you're not eligible for higher one, then how do you attain from that platform a higher destination? All very, very brilliant questions. Lahari, human beings have different natures and faith according to their different levels of eligibility. Adhikari, Sanskrit. People impelled primarily by the mode of ignorance have natural faith in the tamasika shastras. Those who are affected primarily by the mode of passion have natural faith in the rajasika shastras. And those in the mode of goodness naturally have faith in the sattvika shastra. One's belief in a particular conclusion of the shastra is naturally in accordance to one's faith. So according to the mode that you're in, you'll have a different view of sublimity, a different faith. So according to that, you'll be attracted to a particular shastra. If you're, just like in Christianity, when my father used to run he had a loft in Harlem, East 25th Street and 3rd Avenue. He had a loft in Harlem. A dress contractor, my father was. And he used to tell me that there was a big Christian preacher in that area called Reverend Sam, the money man. So people were attracted to him. Why? Because that's what their objective was. We see so many people that they're in religion, but their faith is family is the highest thing. You know, I sometimes you see the Jehovah's Witnesses and they give you a magazine and they have a picture of heaven, you know, just with your family and, you know, and everything is beautiful in that way. You know, But then there are Christian monks and spiritualists and deep people. And then, not that I don't know anything about the Jehovah's Witnesses. I see that there seem to be pious people, but just commenting on that magazine. And the other people have faith in that. You know, the new Pope is trying to reorder the Catholic Church because he sees that, you know, in the name of religion, too many people have developed faith in materialism. But that's not his faith. So we can see, according to your faith, you have a different goal, even in spiritual life. As one faithfully carries out the duties for which one has the adhikari, he may come into contact with sadhus and develop a higher adhikari through their association. Adhikari means eligibility. So whatever your mode is, if you carry out the duties faithfully, the hope is it will give you more opportunity to meet with people with higher qualification. And in their association, you'll develop a deeper faith. As soon as a higher eligibility is awakened, one's nature is elevated and will naturally develop faith in more elevated shastra. The authors of shastra are infallible in their wisdom and compose the shastras in such a way that one will gradually develop higher adhikari by carrying out the duties for which one is eligible and in which one naturally has faith. It is for this reason that different directives have been given in the shastra. Faith in the shastra is the root of all auspiciousness. So that trust that somehow or other in sacred texts the objective of life will be maintained, that is the root of auspiciousness. Srimad Bhagavad Gita is the Mamamsa Shastra of all the Shastras. This Siddhanta is clearly stated. I don't know what it means here. Maybe when I go on. Mamamsa Shastra. Devidas, I have studied many Shastras since my childhood, but today, by your grace, I have realized the wonderful truth. Now he's become elevated by his father. And his father now will explain more. Lahari, it is written in Srimad Bhagavatam, Anubhyascha Mahabhyas. Okay, my minutes are running out, so I'm going to have to stop here now and just ask for any questions. Anyone like to ask a question? Okay, anybody else would like to say hello? I heard from Sue Davy from Vidyanagari. Anybody else like to say hello today?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Bo. Yeah. Interesting subject, huh?
Oh, yes, yes. The presentation is very nice of the different philosophies.
Okay.
Yeah, I love how, as usual, okay. I always tell you, I love how clearly you present the philosophy.
Oh, thank you so much. It's hard to hit a home run every time. You know, make it clear every time. But I try.
And practically I always succeed. Yeah.
I felt pretty good today. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Okay, two people there, one at a time. Who is it? Someone say?
Mrs. Malone.
Okay, great. We'll see you and Sue Davy soon. Very nice. And who else said hello? Someone else?
Alexandra Maharaj.
Alexandra, good. You wrote me that you would listen. I'm so happy you're on the class. Thank you so much. Good.
I wanted to ask
anybody
a
else
question
like to
if
say
I
hello?
Could.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Alexandra. Go ahead.
So you were mentioning the difference between the karmis and the bhakti yogis, with the, I guess, the root intention being for material gain and one for pleasing Krishna or achieving pure love of Godhead.
Right.
And I was just wondering, in terms of how that manifests, and I know, although, you know, a Vaishnava might be performing some action that appears material, but if they have that consciousness that's different, then that changes everything. That's the basis, is the consciousness. And I was just wondering if the action is, you know, maybe in a realm of sort of appearance of karmi action, but I guess my question is if it's really just that consciousness that is all the difference.
You know, the phone is not so clear. So just say that again.
I guess my question is, the consciousness is what makes the difference, even though the action is karmic or, you know, in a material sort of situation
right.
or setting. Or
right, like a person may do business, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he may like to make money, right? But he's actually doing it for Krishna, right? Something like that. So is that your question? What is the status of that?
Yeah, but then how does like, you're doing it for Krishna, but by then actually taking whatever profits or percentage of your profits and then giving it for different devotional services to be performed, or, you know, just because you say or think you're doing it for Krishna. I mean, you know.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, doing it for Krishna means that you'll want to somehow connect the results to Krishna. Now, generally, a percentage should be given for altruistic or spiritual work. That's a sure factor way of doing it. Another way is living a life, even raising a family, that's dedicated to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, you're kind of doing it to help do your duty. But to make sure that it's maximum, it has the maximum purification, you know, a percentage should be given to Krishna. And there's two ways to do it. One is, this is my nature, right? I'm doing it because I'm impelled by my modes, but I'm purifying it by giving the result to Krishna. Or at a higher level, one, you know, is not just offering the fruits to Krishna, but out of love, one is doing something for Krishna. And in Bhagavad Gita, there's two verses. One says, yad karoshi yadasa, whatever you're doing, whatever you're eating, give as an offering to me. So Krishna recommends that. So that means the work or your desires come first, and then by offering them, the bhakti comes second. But the second verse says, patram tushpam palam toyam yome bhakta priyachati. If one offers me out of love, water, fruit, flower, I will accept it. So in that case, the love comes first and then the work. So even, you know, you can work completely materialistically under the shastra to some material result. Then you could work kind of materialistically, because it's your impulse, but purified by giving it the results to Krishna. But another way, at the highest platform, you could have love and therefore work for Krishna. And it's different levels of purification. Does that make sense to you, Alexandra?
You'd always have, yeah.
Yeah,
but
I think,
you know,
yeah,
it's so the consciousness can be there, but sometimes, you know, I still wonder, like, even if I want to do it for Krishna, or I have this deep, intense love, and I realize the sort of level that is, and it doesn't relate very well in the karmi world, or within that karmi frame of action in, on the material platform, I guess just keep thinking of him and never forget him and chant, and then it'll be fine.
It's subtle. I think one needs to first purify their consciousness by sadhana. Then one needs the right guidance to understand the subtle distinctions. And ultimately, it's based on sincerity. And God will direct one in the heart. Alexandra, I'm going to, because my phone is running out, but this is exactly what I love in the classes, such really good questions and discussions that not only you benefit for, but it's interesting to the people listening. And when I get back, are you still in New Jersey?
Yep.
When I get back, let's meet, and we can have, like, an extended discussion, too, personally. Okay?
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Wonderful. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Brajarade.
Okay, Haribo. I gave the dates for the program to Govardhan, so I'll be over there soon. Okay, good.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, thank you all. It's so enjoyable to be with all of you. Banchukalpa to review.